Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary
with Dr. Lara Greaves this morning. Morena, Lara, how are you today?
Morena, I'm okay, thanks, but I am on walking ad for a flu vaccine, so everyone should make sure they go and get theirs.
Oh, no. Oh, you poor thing. Yeah, I got mine last week, and I'm glad. I feel protected.
Oh, good to hear. I regret it, yeah.
If you're on campus, by the way, if you're a student, just go to the pharmacy here. They'll do it in like 2 minutes. It's great ads. That's a PSA over. Let's talk about the budget. We've actually had a text from a listener, which I think might be a good thing to start us off this morning. They've asked, why is the budget important? As a kid, my parents would watch it on the TV. I thought it was the most boring thing. I can't change anything announced today, so why should I be interested, genuinely asking? I think that's actually a really good question to start with. What is the budget's significance?
That is a great question. I think really what it was is this legacy of there being more out there budgets back in the day, and nowadays the budgets are a bit more mild and a lot of it's pre-announced, so it's not as exciting as what it used to be. I think that, like, reading the odd summary of the budget or listening to the, even though I'm doing political commentary right now as we speak, I still wouldn't necessarily listen to that many commentators and read that many columns on it. But definitely it's worth having a skim through of a couple of the sort of overall summaries of the budget just to really have a look at the direction the country's going, whether you kind of agree with where the government is prioritising spending. Because that's all that's all building up to your satisfaction with democracy and politics generally, and whether you're going to vote and who you're going to vote for in the next election. Mm-hmm. So it's worth keeping an eye on, really, whether the spending aligns with your values or not.
We've had some announcements already this week. What has been some of the ones that have caught your eye? What's been significant that we've seen ahead of today?
Well, I think, of course, we've had the emissions reduction plan. We've had a lot of discussion about climate change and funding, say, electric vehicles for middle-income households, and a lot of discussion about there not being enough details in that. And I think we're expecting to see a little bit more around public transport today. RNZ's kind of pointing to that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's obviously like a really key, important area is anything relating to climate change. I'm also a fan of they've put $90 million in for school mental health funding, which I think that's literally like every single person in the country is probably going to support that. I mean, there'll be a few people, but that's generally like a really popular thing, and it's something that's like clearly needed, especially through COVID. So there's been bits and pieces a lot along those lines, and some stuff has leaked around the potential for greater funding for the Māori Health Authority, and that funding, we might actually be fairly satisfied with that.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the main things that I've noticed so far in the various announcements.
So it has been sort of health and climate change that have been indicated to be the big ones here. There's obviously a conversation happening about the inequality crisis or the cost of living crisis, I guess, depending where you want to sort of put the lens on that one. But what do you think we might see in terms of that discussion when we look at the budget this afternoon? Because you've mentioned, you know, we're seeing maybe some indications around transport. But what else might we be getting in this afternoon's budget?
Well, I think that there's the potential for some kind of tax credit around working for families. It's been signalled by the Prime Minister. I think they're going to be looking at, and there's a lot of pressure that the media is putting on around the middle-income families as well, so not just necessarily thinking about those on benefits, although it's quite clear that they also need some kind of boost financially. I think that that's going to be the biggest point of the election, as long as we, and this is one of those hope we don't get any other COVID variants and COVID stays kind of relatively calm, but if as long as all that's relatively, benign, then it becomes a matter of talking about what's going to happen around the cost of living, around inequality and inflation and interest rates and those sorts of things. So that's the key contest for the election, because generally voters will say National is good at handling the economy, whether that's true or not.
So that's
what Luxon has been already hitting them with, and it's a real return back to that classic like National Party, and it reminds me a lot of the 2005 campaign with Don Brash, as you know, someone with a lot of economic credentials around being the Reserve Bank governor and that sort of thing, and him kind of hitting Labor on this, oh, you just spend our money. The voters should be able to spend their own money. Like, you're just taxing and spending. They're addicted to spending, and it's the same rhetoric. They think that no matter what Labor does, it's never going to be enough for its critics on the left, and genuinely for people who are on benefits, it will not be enough. But then we've got this time round, and this is the build-up for the next election. We will have National hammering them with saying they're, like, addicted to spending, they're spending money, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's going to be what comes out of the budget like for most people really is a lot of that rhetoric.
Yeah, well, let's talk about another election that's happening much sooner. It's the Aussie election. It's pretty much happening at the moment over the ditch. What is going on? It seems to be pretty kind of chaotic sort of politics moment there. What is happening?
Yeah, I think it's one of those political contests that makes us feel quite happy about our own system. So you've basically got Scott Morrison, although there's been like a period of unrest in Australia where they had something like 7 prime ministers in 12 years. And Scott Morrison, or everyone calls him ScoMo, or Scotty from Marketing is his other nickname, has kind of come out on top the past few years. And he's faced a lot of criticism around not being there for the bushfires. He famously went on a trip to Hawaii and then said, "I don't hold a hose, mate," as his excuse. And so that's been incredibly unpopular, and he's kind of, they call the last election Morrison's miracle because the polls just kind of completely screwed up and Morrison ended up victorious. I think this time around everyone's a little bit, I think, from what I could see, is like tired of politics. There's a lot of corruption and there's a lot of argument over whether to establish an independent corruption watchdog, and it kind of, there's not a lot of substance in a lot of the debate. There's a lot of arguing. They're a lot yellier, shoutier than New Zealand politics, that's for sure. But I think what everyone's going to be watching is whether the polls are right at the moment, which they are closing, but it's looking like it will probably be a Labour win. But people just don't necessarily trust A, the system, B, the politicians, and C, the polls there. And that's kind of awful to see for our, like, Australian cousins, isn't it?
Absolutely. Give us a very brief rundown on who this is kind of a contest between, because some people might not know. I mean, who is Scott Morrison standing for and who's the opposition at this point? What is the kind of two sides of this?
Yeah, so Scott Morrison is the leader of the Liberals, and the Liberals and the Nationals are what people refer to as a coalition. And they're the right wing, and they're key, like, they're the classic right wing. They actually align with National here. So Chris Bishop's actually been over there campaigning with them and hanging out. So, and then we've got Labour on the left, which is Anthony Albanese, who everyone's calling Albo, who kind of, his story is, he's like, well, I've got three religions, his actual religion, the Labour Party and the Rabbitohs, so, you know, like a league team. And so that's just kind of like their positions, is that they're the kind of centre left and centre right. Their contest is complicated further by the independents being around, and there's been this like move towards, especially candidates on the right, standing as what they call teal independents. So like right wing but pro environment, because there's been such a lack of attention to climate change and the environment and Australian policy over time. So it's really a race between the two, and then also watching to see the extent to which independents change the race as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll keep a close eye on that one. Let's talk a little bit about our own sort of election space again. Tauranga, the by-election, Te Pāti Māori has made some very interesting calls this week. They're not going to stand a candidate, and this has been, I guess you could say, received controversially by some of the candidates who have been standing, particularly from ACT. I'm sure no one's probably surprised that they're sitting on opposite sides of the fence on this one. What's actually gone down here, and why are we seeing a sort of heated conversation?
I think firstly, I think we should just like believe Māori, and especially Wahine Māori, when people say like, hey, I'm getting a lot of harassment. Because like, for example, I just had a student recently who was looking to interview Wahine Māori in the justice area, and we could not find their contact details online. And that's a really good indicator. And like, honestly, I've had a lot of harassment, you know, like just awful stuff. And we've seen sort of even other academics come out and say that, you know, the Sean Hendy Fugue Wild case. So Māori are actually getting harassed. We've seen this like time and time again. That is definitely an issue. However, for the Māori Party in this case, it is like generally when they have run candidates from Tauranga, they've had 100 to 200 votes. So it's not like a big contest for them. There wouldn't be necessarily that many positives for them running as well in this case. So that's turned into a bit of a controversy. But I think what it really does speak to is it's really speaking to them, kind of focusing on their base, which are, you know, those younger generations of Māori who are sick of this kind of thing happening, are sick of being harassed. And it's really speaking to their issues, and they're looking at their voter base, which is Māori on the Māori roll, and people who are really conscious of discrimination and stigma.
The Tauranga by-election is looking quite white, it has to be said, at this point. So what are we going to see there? This is maybe not news for Tauranga in a lot of ways, but what are we maybe going to see come out of this?
Well, an interesting counterpoint to that is I think I've heard the quote that the majority of the last 30 years they've had Māori MPs. So it's the other interesting thing where we view them that way. But yeah, the Māori MPs, Winston Peters and Simon Bridges, of course. I think that, so there's been a lot of discussion around, like, National has been, rightly so, hammered on the diversity thing, having four white men standing for selection. And so that's clearly pointing to the fact that they need to do something about their internal processes. Because, yeah, Sam Ufendahl, their candidate, that was where the real contest was, was that who would win the National, who'd win the national selection process was the real contest. So he'll go up against Jan Tinetti, who's a Labor Party cabinet minister. But, I mean, Labor won the party vote by something like 12% in that seat last election, but still lost the candidate vote by about 4%.
Right.
So there's no way, like, unless Sam Ufendahl really screws up and does something ridiculous, there's pretty much no way that he's going to lose at this point. So, I mean, that's going to be a pretty straightforward by-election as far as we can see, but it's really just watching to see what the margin looks like between National and Labor, because, of course, it was only Labor was only 4% behind, but 2020 was the red wave election and, like, the, you know, single-party majority Labor election. So the record highs for Labor. So it's really a matter of seeing how much that's dropped. Yeah. And just seeing what the margin ends up. If it's more like 20-30%, then I think that's when Labor's an indication that Labor's in trouble. But it's probably just going to be a straightforward by-election.
Well, thank you very much for your time this morning, Dr. Lara Greaves. We'll be following the budget closely this afternoon. I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.